The Tom Woods Show, episode 2143.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, if you've decided it's best not to have your kids educated by people who have declared war on you, then consider the self-taught Ron Paul curriculum. Instructors like me will give your kids an unfair advantage and an education you and I could only have dreamed of. But make sure you join through my link, because only there do you get my $160 worth of free bonuses. My link is ronpaulhomeschool.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. All right, this episode is for all you nerds out there. Or maybe I should say geek. I'm not sure I ever really got the distinction there. I kind of feel like all nerds are geeks and all geeks are nerds. I feel like the words are interchangeable. People have tried to correct me on this. I think I'm just going to continue in my ignorance. I think this is more an episode for the wannabe nerds, because maybe some of you real nerds already know the stuff in this episode. I don't even know. Who even knows what I'm talking about here? But we're going to talk open source today, which is a term you hear a lot, right? Oh, it's open source. And everybody just assumes that you know what they're talking about. It's just the way economists, Austrians included, will say things like, well, you know, the Fed bought treasuries and blah, 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 as if everybody just knows what that means. I guarantee you 90 to 95% of the public has no idea what you mean when you say the Fed bought treasuries. They don't even know what you're talking about, but you're just obliviously going on as if everybody does. Well, likewise, doggone it, for all you geeks or nerds or whatever the name for you is, we don't know what this means, all right? Will you just talk to us like we're seven, which is what we need? So what we're going to do is we're going to dive into not only the what is it, because that won't take too long, but there's a real, I hate this term, but voluntarist aspect to it that I think we ought to unpack, because it's a little bit, can be a little bit of a white pill, so-called, for some of us. Now, before we do that, I have some life advice for you that I absolutely insist you take. You know that Father's Day is coming up, and as a father myself, I've gotten a lot of wonderful gifts over the years. But I can promise you, that if my kids got me steaks for Father's Day, I would not be unhappy. And it's not just me, everybody. Dads want steaks. And since I can vouch for Omaha Steaks, having been a customer for so many years, I can tell you, your dad's going to be happy. So go to omahasteaks.com, type Woods in the search bar, and order the Dads Want Steaks package. It's an amazing deal. $99 gets you 16 mouthwatering entrees that your dad is guaranteed to love. So smoky tender bacon-wrapped filet mignons, gourmet jumbo franks, air-chilled boneless chicken breasts, caramel apple tartlets for dessert. Unbelievable. Great. And if you order them through me, it's a special gift for my listeners. When you type Woods in the search bar and order the Dads Want Steaks package, you'll also get 8 free Omaha Steaks burgers. Now, come on, your dad deserves that. They're full of bold, beefy flavor made from 100% Omaha Steaks. So don't wait. Send dad more than just a gift. Send him an experience he'll love and can share with you before we run out of beef and steaks and are suffering in misery. Go enjoy it while you can. So go to omahasteaks.com, type Woods into the search bar, order the Dads Want Steaks package. You get 16 entrees and 4 desserts, plus 8 free Omaha Steaks burgers. So go enjoy that. Now, for here, I'm going to be talking today to TJ DeVries, who is a coder and a supporter of the Tom Woods Show, and he came up with the idea for this episode. So buckle your seatbelts, folks. Here we go. TJ, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here. Very excited.
All right, look, I got your note on MeWe because you're a member of my group. That's great. And I read it and I thought, oh, this guy's a real smart guy. And then I looked you up and what are you, like 15? I'm giving you look like a young guy. I just have to ask you.
I'm 28. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you are a young guy, right?
Yes.
You are a young guy. All right. So, you know, it's funny to me. One of the aspects of aging that I haven't minded is getting to a point where you're older than somebody who has a lot to teach you. You know, usually you're younger than the person who has a lot to teach you. Or I go to a concert and I'm older than the person singing. That's not right.
Yeah.
That, what? You know, you're supposed to be the adult. I'm supposed to be the kid. Now it's all changed around. Anyway, so I want you to talk to me about this subject, but I want you to understand that the folks out there who are really super knowledgeable about this, they have other podcasts they can listen to scratch
right.
that particular itch.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to talk to the 90% of my audience who are normal people. And I say that affectionately. I love what you people do. And I'm very much a nerd in some things. So I'm not saying that it's a put down. I just want you to talk to us. So for example, when you say open source and you say, oh, well, when I say open source, I just mean that all the source code, see, right away, what? Right away, I don't know what you're talking about. So I want you to talk to me like I'm a complete idiot. And so there are some people out there who will think that is the appropriate way to talk to me.
Yeah, I'll just pretend that I'm on part of the problem and talking to Dave or something like that.
Oh, that's a good one. Oh, man. See, if I'd been Michael Malice, I would have thought of that myself, but
well,
I'm not. All right.
You know, I only found out about Michael through you, so I sort of consider him a secondary acquaintance kind of thing.
Okay, now finally somebody gets the hierarchy correct. You were supposed to find out about Michael Malice through me and not the other way around. That's how it was back in 2017.
Exactly.
Anyway.
And you know,
I'm
a supporting listener of you, but all I got for listening to Michael is this, you know, t-shirt that says governors for Gitmo. So, you know, there's so much trade-offs going on
here. Oh my gosh. All right. We better jump into this before somebody gets in trouble.
That's probably good. Yeah. I'll get in trouble. But so I think broadly speaking, like when we just say open source, it's probably helpful to like take an even step back and say like, what even is source code? Because I think a lot of people don't understand what's going on with computers, which is fine. I don't understand anything about my car. So like, that's great. When we say source code, what we basically mean is like, in today's age, programmers type some letters into the computer, right? And we're trying to speak basically like a language that the computer can understand. So there's like various different programming language, all different stuff going on, and the computer translates those things into instructions that it runs. So effectively, having the source code is different than having just something that you like download or like install from the internet, because you can actually sort of read the intent of what's supposed to be happening and like change that. And so that's the difference, a very fundamental difference between open source versus just like downloading an app. For downloading an app, you get sort of something that you can run, but you can't like look into it. And then for open source as well, the cool part is that you can start to begin to extend or do other things like that, which we'll talk about as we get going. Does that sort of like, you got any questions about that part thus far?
All right. I guess I understand that because sometimes people will say, well, look, it's all open source.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm glad you're assuring me of this, but this means nothing. So, All right. Well, I suppose that does make sense.
Yeah. And the like some of the benefits, especially for, you know, the kinds of people that would listen to this podcast would be that you could then go, and if you had sufficient skill, or you could, you know, hire someone to go look at it and read it, and you could ensure that it's doing what it promised to do, right? So like, just because the app says like, I'm a flashlight app, we all know that like, there were a million flashlight apps that were like also secretly logging everywhere you went. You know, so just because it says that it's going to do something, you actually want to look at the instructions of what it's going to say. And that's one of the benefits of open source.
Can you take a minute, even though this isn't directly related to this general thing, what are the kinds of projects you yourself work on?
Yeah.
That are quote unquote open source?
Yeah, the main project that I actually work on in like the open source world is a project called NeoVim. And it actually has a really interesting history that's part of some of the stuff that we could talk about today. And effectively, NeoVim is kind of like, some people are going to be upset at me for saying this, but like it's basically like, you know, Microsoft Word, but for programmers. So it's what I actually use to write my code in. So interestingly, I like write code for the thing that I write code inside of. But the whole project is open source, which is really cool. So that just means like it's free for people to use. And if there was something that you didn't like or a feature that it didn't have, you could actually go. And this is how I got involved with the project was like, you can just go and make that feature. And if the owners of the project decide that they like that feature, it'll get merged into like the main project, I guess, right? So they'll accept your changes and then that feature can go and help other people. So that's like a major thing that I work on. And it's actually sort of like a branch we call fork, sort of like a fork in the road from an older project called Vim that has a really long and storied history in open source.
First of all, how long have you been doing this kind of work, period?
Yeah, I got really interested in doing open source actually with NeoVim pretty shortly after I started to learn how to code. I had a coworker at an internship that I was doing while I was in college, and they sort of introduced me to this idea of like, hey, you're writing code all day. Why don't you like make yourself faster by writing code? And I was like, that makes sense. I like being faster and more efficient. And they were like, hey, there's a thing that you can use called NeoVim that does that. And so they introduced me to the project and I like fell in love with this idea of sort of like iterating every day, getting a little bit better every day. And, you know, looking back after 5 years, like, wow, I'm in a lot faster and better spot than I was. So I got interested in the project through that. And then there were just some features that I was like, it would be cool if NeoVim could do X. Doesn't really matter what X is. And so I asked the people who were managing the project if that would be a cool feature. And they said, yeah, let's do it. Let's work together. And because of basically the way that they were super friendly and nice, I was like, wow, I want to keep doing this. I'm learning a lot. They're teaching me a lot. There was this beautiful sort of like mentoring relationship that was happening there just organically because we were both working on something that we were passionate and interested about. And so that's sort of how I got started down this open source path. That was probably 8 years ago or so.
Well, I'm kind of embarrassed to say this, but you know, we've all heard about, when people talk about Bitcoin, we've all heard about forks.
Yep.
And I just kind of assumed this must be some uniquely crypto thing or uniquely Bitcoin thing. But apparently, it's more of an open source thing.
Yeah. So actually, what it comes from is this idea of basically the way that you track changes for most source code involves basically like, you could think of it as basically like a road. It's like you're on this road and there's like each step on the road is a set of changes. When you apply those changes to the code, you end up with the final result. I'm sort of like adding up deltas or something like that, maybe from some other area. And a fork represents when you take basically two separate paths, right? You're presented with a new path. You know, on the left is Bitcoin Cash and on the right is Bitcoin, for example. That's why you might hear the word fork. But actually, NeoVim is another example of a fork. The original project Vim still exists and still is like being worked on, and it's a really great project. But NeoVim sort of had different goals. So basically, we took like a bunch of the steps along the road, and then we said, we're going to fork the project, right? We're going to go right, and the other project's going to go left. And we can still be nice and send work back and forth with each other, but they're two sort of distinct project. So it's a general term for sort of like this idea in the software world. And then of course, because it's in the software world, crypto also sort of uses those terms. They're quite applicable, I think, as well.
Now, I think the thing that's going to get folks most interested in this is the way it relates to our philosophy of life and not just about stuff like this. But just to help people visualize this a bit better and see the significance of it, give me a couple of examples of an open source project.
Yeah, probably the most prominent and most famous project would be Linux. It's an operating system that is in some ways, and by operating system, I mean something like Windows or Mac OS or something like that, right? But it actually runs not just on like desktops, but Android is based off of Linux. And it's basically the operating system that runs in every smart TV or server or camera or your printer or whatever it is. All over the world, there's devices running on Linux, and it is a free platform that people from all over the world contribute to. It doesn't matter, you know, your country or your current government or, you know, in general, your political beliefs or anything like that. It's just people working together to make this thing better or to do new stuff that it wasn't able to do before. That's probably the most prominent example of like an open source project.
Maybe to help me understand it a little bit better, let's try this analogy and tell me what this would have to look like for it to be analogous to an open source project with a fork. So let's take Wikipedia. Yep. Let's say I don't like the way somebody's Wikipedia entry is going, and I don't like the editors who are working on it, and I think it's going down the wrong path. Basically, that's a zero-sum game. I start fighting with those editors, right? I introduce, hey, you forgot to mention this. And then they want to take that out because it makes the person look good. And then they put something bad in. Right? Mm-hmm. And then we just are. So there's no, well, look, I'm going to fork this and we're going to have this alternative entry about Michael Malice to pick someone at random. You know, well, it's more that there's only going to be one Wikipedia entry on this person. And we're going to spend the rest of our lives fighting over the direction of that thing. So the difference here is that this doesn't have to be a zero-sum game. You can go your way, but we can go ours. Is that the idea?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And even like, it doesn't even have to be that anyone else agrees with your fork. You could just like have your own personal Wikipedia, right? Like that you used almost as your own sort of like knowledge store. So it doesn't even have to be widely adopted. It could just be that you like it and you want it to be this way. And everyone says, that's cool. Go for it. You can have your own little fork with your five little changes and that makes you happy. Do that. That's great.
Tell me about when you tried to explain all this to your father. Because it rings true. Because I mean, I'm probably, you know, your father's probably my age. So so let's hear it.
Yeah. So it's very funny because I do a lot of sort of stuff related to NeoVim. I spend time on it. I make, you know, these other projects and generally in this like open source world. And I'm trying to explain to my dad one time when I got added to like sort of the official group for the owners of NeoVim. And, you know, I'm telling him, oh, it's so cool. We can all like share it. It's free. Like anybody gets to use it, all this stuff. And he goes, I don't understand. Are you a communist now? You know, like tongue in cheek. That's my dad's joke style. I'm like, Dad, no, you don't understand. This is capitalism, right? This is everybody has their own property and they're able to interact with each other freely with sort of their property and their ideas, which is sort of this pitch of open source as voluntarism, which I think is really fun for us libertarians to think about and explore.
Right. Yeah. Which I do want to get into in a minute, but where do you find all these projects?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there is sort of a technology called Git, G-I-T. And that's sort of the main, I guess you could say, protocol that a lot of these open source projects speak. And you can host that anywhere. So you could host it on your own computer. You could host it in the cloud. You could do a whole variety of different options. And there are a few other alternatives that are less popular. A primary way, though, that people share their projects right now and sort of collaborate and work together is on a website called GitHub. And it's basically just like a place where Git repositories, so basically code bases that have source code that are open source, right? You can contribute there and it has some additional things that make project management for these large projects work nicely. And there's like literally millions and millions of people. I think there's probably about 70 million plus people on GitHub today and over 28 million, I think was when I last checked, public projects available. So there is a very large number of people and projects available sort of in this open source world.
Yeah, apparently it's tens of millions.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
So I guess there's got to be some kind of search functionality. I mean, how would I even know where to start?
Yeah, so I think like that's definitely something that you might want to do if you were searching for something. People definitely aggregate different lists or, you know, you could talk to someone else who maybe has something. And in fact, there's lots of, I don't want to say commercial because they're not necessarily like, you don't have to pay money for them, but there's lots of product replacements for popular applications and other things like that, that live on GitHub and they are free to use. And I'll say regular people, like, you know, my wife, she's not a programmer. She would use these things or something like that. But they just happen to be open source and live here.
Okay. All right. I got it. So now let's go through and talk to me about how somebody who is, I mean, the word voluntarism is a little bit weird because there is technically a school of philosophy called voluntarism. So I rather than confuse people with that, you could say voluntarism, but that makes me want to commit an atrocity. So let's just say it conforms to the ideas of a voluntary society.
Yeah.
So let's flesh that out a little bit because I think these days it's understandable that people are feeling a little bit ground down and pessimistic about the future. So to see that there is something really important and thriving out there that really in its essence comes right out of the way we think, well, that's a little bit of a white pill for us.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that's been so exciting for me. Believe it or not, Tom, I know this will be really hard for you to believe. I actually do some content where I basically am live coding. So I'm just coding on the internet with my like camera on and stuff. And people watch that. I know that's going to be, you're going to think that seems crazy. It is a little crazy. That's fine. But when I'm there and I'm working on my projects, I have people from all over the world watching. And it's so exciting to see people sort of join together that I'll never be able to meet in person, that live under various different kinds of government, different political beliefs, different religions, everything, right? But we're working together on some project just because we like it. So I think there's this really cool aspect of voluntary association that's happening. No one's forcing them to work on these projects. Many people aren't getting paid. There's nothing in it except for this idea of like, we want to work together and make this happen, which is really exciting. So even for like NeoVim, which is just this one project amongst a sea of it, but it's, you know, the one I have the most familiarity with. We have people contributing from China regularly, from Japan, from all over Europe, from all over the US. You know, we have people regularly contributing and working on the project from all over the world, which I think is a really cool example of sort of this decentralized voluntary association and getting really amazing things done that I like use for 40 plus hours a week.
Yeah, see, that's amazing. I mean, I obviously don't do any of this, but I was still nevertheless really blown away years and years ago when it was Thanksgiving. And the evening of Thanksgiving, I realized, oh no, wait a minute, I forgot. I need that graphic done and I never got it done. And I don't want to bother anybody in the US on Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. So I went online. I thought, you know, there are a lot of countries in the world that don't celebrate Thanksgiving, like all of them minus one. You know? So I put out a little ad. I said, hey, look, here's what I need done. I'll pay you X. Who can do it? And before you know it, half the world lit up, mm-hmm. ready to do this job for me. And that's such a tiny, tiny, small scale thing compared to what you do. But it still impressed the heck out of me that within an hour, somebody on the other side of the globe had done something I needed. I was super happy to pay that person. That person was super happy to do it. That alone, apart from the complexities involved in what you do, that alone is a really beautiful and amazing thing. So now let's talk about some of the examples of people who you do find wind up helping you or fixing things for you, stuff like that.
Yeah, I've been really impressed. I started some other smaller sort of like open source projects related to some of the ones that I've done, and they've ended up getting quite a like little following among my community. I've had people volunteer to even do things like respond to questions from users. Now that for me is like the worst imaginable thing to do in my free time, right? Like someone like, hey, TJ, how do I do this thing? And I'm like, can you just read the document that I wrote for you that tells you already what to do? But I have people who are like, no, I like doing that. I like helping those people and making it happen. So they're volunteering their time to just like help people learn how to, you know, use the project better or to answer questions or to filter out sort of erroneous like reports of people or whatever it is. And they do that regularly for me. And they check in with me about what could be helpful or, you know, and we're working together. And it's not like I'm their boss. You know, I don't pay them. I don't send them anything. We're just working together to make this project what we all sort of like hope it could be.
Hey, everybody, a quick sponsor message. You know, there's an old marketing adage that says you have to hear or see something 7 times before you buy it. I think with life insurance, you have to be reminded like 700 times. It's not flashy. It doesn't give you immediate gratification, but you know that you need to do it for the sake of your loved ones who depend on you. Well, Policy Genius is your one-stop shop to find the insurance you need at the right price. So very simple. Head to policygenius.com to get started. In minutes, you can compare personalized quotes from top companies to find your lowest price. You could save 50% or more on life insurance by comparing quotes with Policy Genius. And the licensed agents at Policy Genius are on hand through the entire process to help you understand your options and make decisions with confidence. The Policy Genius team works for you, not the insurance companies. And what's great is Policy Genius doesn't add on extra fees. It doesn't sell your info to third parties. It's got thousands of 5-star reviews across Google and Trustpilot. And it has options that offer coverage in as little as a week and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Since 2014, Policy Genius has helped over 30 million people shop for insurance. So head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. So again, I'm trying to put myself in this world for a minute. Mm-hmm. How does it work? Do you wake up one day and suddenly you find somebody's working on your thing? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. So the interesting part of like the open source thing is there's generally at least one or sort of like a group of owners of a project, and they get to sort of decide whether something gets accepted into, you know, their version of the product.
So it's not communism after all, Dad.
It's not. Exactly. There's a gate, you know, and the line stops here. I decide what the vision and what I want to do for the project. But what people can do is they can basically suggest changes in like a very structured format so that I could basically press like one button and those changes get accepted. And then we can chat back and forth about saying, I think maybe if we did this, or like we need to test this more, or we need to like make sure that it works under this situation. And we have that conversation back and forth, and then we're able to come to a resolution generally, you know, or you say, I don't want to accept this, and that's also fine. But you come to a resolution, you say, this looks great, let's accept it. And then that gets accepted into the main project. That person doesn't necessarily then have rights to be able to like accept anything else into the project. I'm still the one that maintains the control of the project or whatever, right? But they're able to accept those changes. And it does literally happen that like you'll wake up one morning and there will be someone suggesting a change, sometimes a change that very clearly took a significant amount of hours. You know, like I've seen changes on some of the projects that I work on that obviously took 40, 80, 100 hours, you know, like a really incredible amount of time that went through to make that change. You just wake up and it's there and you talk about it and you make it right and then you get to merge it in. And those are some of the most like exciting experiences, especially when you're making your own little project, because you're like, wow, someone else in the world like cares and uses and gets value from this thing that I'm passionate about, which feels amazing.
I feel like everything I ask is going to be dumb here, so just be patient with me. But I want to know this kind of an open source project that everybody can see the internal guts of it. Mm-hmm. It's available to the public. How is it possible to use that model and actually make a living? I mean, just being blunt.
Yeah, so there's two primary ways that people do that, and both I think are really exciting. The first one that's gaining a lot of popularity is that people have ways to do basically voluntary like sponsorships of the person. So I have like a page where people can say, similar to supportinglisteners.com, you should probably go there if you're not there already. But you can go there and you could be able to like sponsor the work that I do. And there's various different platforms or whatever. And that's becoming more popular as people are realizing, oh, you know, I'm getting like hundreds or thousands of dollars of value from this, you know, a year. I can probably chip in $5, you know? And so there's that model, which is really exciting. And that's more like focused on supporting maybe like the creator. But there's another model that's also pretty popular that basically deals with how you license the code. And it may be that it's free and open for somebody to run for personal projects or for certain like numbers of projects. But if they wanted to do something really like for a company, then you have a separate license for running things commercially. The code's still open source. You can still look at it. You can still read it. You can still do all of that. But then to run it for commercial purposes, you need to enter into some contract with the person who makes it.
Can you try to give us a sense of the diverse array of projects out there by just picking at random the kinds of things people might be working on nowadays?
Yeah, so one that I use every day is a thing called OBS, which is Open Broadcasting Studio. And that's what I use to do all of my like different video streaming things. So it has the ability to, you know, like upload video, set different scenes, do animations, like all this crazy stuff. That's like one example project. Another one could be like 3D modeling. So Blender would be an example of that. And you can do 3D modeling in it. There's accounting software. There's, you know, like operating systems, like I mentioned before, databases, websites, applications, even apps that you could download on your phone. Their source code may be freely available online for you to do. So I would say sort of anything that could run on a computer, there is probably an open source version of that that exists somewhere.
Did you get to your current level of knowledge through formal education or are you self-taught?
I did graduate with a like degree in this field, but a lot of the education that I've gotten or a lot of the really interesting ideas have sort of been like, I would say, on the job working and working with other people who taught me a lot of stuff, particularly in the open source world, which is one of the fun things about it. I've also gotten to do some things with people, which is fun, where someone starts working on a project and they're much my junior in terms of expertise and getting to teach them ideas and help lead them to new revelations about how to write code or how to write better code. Open source community is often quite happy to do those kinds of things.
Now, forgive me if I missed this part, but would you describe yourself as a freelancer?
No, so I have a regular like day job working at a company doing software development stuff. So I'm like a normal salaried employee at the company. It does so happen that this company is like an open source company, which is kind of cool. And we actually use the business model that I mentioned about having different licenses for like commercial versus private usage.
I see. But it's in a sense, coincidental because it doesn't directly impact the projects that you're talking about or the main one you're telling us about.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay. So you do this entirely as a, I mean, you can get some sponsorships and stuff, but you do it more or less as a passion project?
Yeah, that's correct.
So you work on this type of thing, generally speaking, during the day, and then to relax and unwind, you do more of it. That's what we're to understand?
Yeah, we sort of have a joke about this where it's like, there's a general meme for the kind of programmers interested in this kind of thing where you feel like, ah, nice, done coding for the day. And then you like spin around in your chair or something. You're like, time to relax. And then you start coding your own personal project.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I remember the editor of a magazine I liked very much. We were having drinks and I was telling him that I enjoy playing chess in my spare time. And he said, oh my gosh, all I do all day is use my brain. The last thing in the world I want to do is take up a hobby like chess. What's the matter with you? But anyway, is there an analogy you can think of between open source and anything that existed in the world prior to the year 2000? I mean, is it really something that would previously have been inconceivable?
Yeah, I mean, so much of it really would have been inconceivable in terms of especially like the scale. And there's a lot of technical difficulties in terms of managing these kinds of projects, just like in terms of giving people access and downloading it all over the world. I do sort of like to think about it as almost like a collaborative book, you know, but it's still sort of like, that would still be forced into having only one book as the result, right? So there's something different about this idea of being able, like, everyone can end up with their own version or they can change the direction of, you know, a project or something. So to me, it's very difficult to draw analogies about open source to other places, which is also why it's kind of fun and I wanted to talk about it because it feels very sort of unique in terms of what's going on in the world and where people are and what they're doing.
Is it possible to crack into what you do without getting the formal degree? And if so, how?
Oh, yeah. I super think that you could break into a project. I would recommend that you probably have some coding experience before you try and, you know, start submitting changes to somebody because they might be like, this doesn't make sense at all or even run.
Right, right.
But yeah. I know plenty of people. One of my good friends who works with some open source stuff and we do some other like content things together. He was a musician for a long time. He was working in LA, trying to make it big as a musician. And then he was like, why am I starving myself? Surely I could do something else. And he taught himself how to code. And then now he's a very successful programmer and he works in like the open source world. So I think it's quite easy to do. And in some ways, I think open source is a really great sort of training ground for people to gain skills that are very employable. You work with the technologies that are, you know, useful for the day. It's something that you're passionate about. So you'll probably learn it better and care a lot more about it. You'll be able to meet other people and network in ways that you never thought possible before because you're meeting people who are like already successful engineers somewhere. There's all these different things that could happen. And in general, as long as you're nice and like considerate as the person suggesting changes, most maintainers will be nice and considerate back. My recommendation that I give to people when they ask me, how do you get started in open source, is I just say outwork and out nice everybody else who's trying to do something for there. And the maintainer will be super happy and excited that you're passionate about whatever they're passionate about.
Well, I've gone ahead because the link to sponsor you and find out about what it is you do is not very podcast friendly. It would be, you know, this.this/that.
Yeah.
So instead, I just created tomwoods.com/TJ.
Super
easy. Go to tomwoods.com/. Hey, look, I can amaze people too.
I'm
with
impressed.
Technology.
That was fast.
That was fast. Yeah. Of course, what that really means is that I was ignoring your previous answer. But that's doesn't matter.
You can important listen thing. To it later, so it's fine.
That's right. That's right. Because nothing unusual at all about me driving around listening to my own show in the car. Anyway,
made all your daughters listen to it everywhere.
Well,
you drive.
Yeah, I know. The thing is, every once in a while, I do want to go back and listen because sometimes I'm concentrating so hard to stay ahead of a conversation mm-hmm. and make sure I've got a good follow-up that some of it I don't absorb as well as I'd like to. Mm-hmm. But then I think, do my daughters think there's something wrong with me? You know, I'm listening to my own thing. But once in a while, I'm just dying to, I know that guy gave a good answer. I got to go back and listen. Anyway, so tomwoods.com/TJ will redirect to you. People can find out more about what you're doing. So I think we'll leave it there with a thanks. And I appreciate you helping me understand this better and exposing us to a part of the world that is operating according to principles we all believe in, and it's flourishing and doing amazing things.
Thanks, Tom. I super appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I've been a longtime fan. So thanks a bunch.
All right, folks, that is going to do it for the Tom Woods Show today. If you like and appreciate the Tom Woods Show and you'd like to talk to people of the caliber of TJ DeVries, well, you can be a member of my private group. And my private group is a no-censorship group where a lot of smart people and nice, normal people interact with each other. You can get in there through supportinglisteners.com. So go do that, supportinglisteners.com. Warm my heart. Let me know you appreciate the show here. I'd love to welcome you into the group, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.